Chapter 62. The Colour Prince's army had fought through the pass into Attache with few casualties. Liv hadn't seen any of the fighting, and all the evidence of it was gone by the time she'd gone through. After they made it through the pass, everyone had assumed they'd head straight for Eidos, the largest city in southern Attache. Instead, while smaller parties of foragers fanned out through the Attachian countryside to feed the army, the prince had taken the bulk of the army south, deeper into the mountains. He cut across the river and the main road, and then marched upstream, instead of downstream, to Eidos. Eventually they came to the great silver mines at Lorien. Liv had never seen anything like it. The hills for at least a league in every direction were studded with holes. 350 mines, the prince said, worked by 30,000 slaves. The mines were owned by the Attachian government, but nobles throughout the seven satrapies leased them and paid rents and a share of their profits to the state. Liv had heard of slaves being sent to the mines, but she'd never had any real concept of what it meant, other than that it was something bad that owners could threaten rebellious or lazy slaves with. Some Attachian students had mentioned their families renting out their slaves for the months after harvest to rich slaveholders who would transport them to the mines, work them, and send them back before planting. Apparently, a lot didn't come back, and most families would only rent out their slaves that way if they desperately needed the money. Around the hills beyond the mines was a ring of wooden towers. The area inside was too vast to enclose with a fence, but the land had been cleared of timber. Any escaping slave would have to cross a great deal of open ground. Each wooden tower had a small complement of guards, horses, and several slave-hunting mastiffs. A small town called Thorikos sat below the mines on the river. Here the ore was loaded onto barges, food was brought in from the surrounding countryside, trade was conducted between slaveholders, medical treatment and tools were sold, and disputes were adjudicated. Thorikos was mostly empty, though. Everyone who could flee had. Left behind were only an old assemblyman and those citizens too old or ill to make the trip. Liv wondered at the cowardice of their families. Who would leave his mother to an advancing army? War brings out the worst in many, and the best in few. There was no battle. When the overlords of the mine saw the forces arrayed against them, they knew it would be suicide. The soldiers stationed at Lorien were guards who kept the slaves in and captured those who escaped, not disciplined fighting men. They had only half a dozen drafters, none of them women skilled in battle. All those had been withdrawn to Eidos. The assemblyman met the Colour Prince outside of town. He looked quite frightened by the sight of the prince. Liv had forgotten how overwhelming he was at first. But the old man surrendered gracefully and begged for mercy. The Colour Prince granted it. He swore no one would be killed or accosted, that nothing would be stolen except food and tools. And he was true to his word, though it caused grumbling. It would have been harder, Liv realized, if the army had experienced any privation. Since their food stores were still well stocked and no one had yet died in claiming plunder, it was far easier to ask the army to go without. The prince took great care in how he seized the mines themselves. He sent soldiers to circle through the hills to capture each wooden watchtower to keep the slaves from escaping in the chaos. If he really did mean to free the slaves as he'd claimed, he meant to do it at his own pace, in his own way. And so it was. Coyos, White Oak, loved a spectacle. As the evening sun set the sky alight with fire, he spoke to the 30,000 gathered slaves. All would be released immediately as soon as they listened to his few poor words. He would clothe and feed them all tonight. They were free to go wherever they pleased, so long as they didn't steal from his people or join the Chromeria against them. Or, he said, they could march with him and take equal shares of the plunder with the rest of his soldiers, and exact vengeance, and perhaps make enough to start a life, to earn a plot of land if they wished to farm, or a grant of money if they wished to live in the cities. They had 10 days to decide, but they had to decide before he assaulted Eidos. If they chose to march with the army, they would be choosing to live by the army's rules. But it was their own choice, freely given, and they would from this day never be slaves again. With his own hands, he struck the chains off an old slave's hands. It was a huge gamble, and the next day it looked like it was one that had failed spectacularly. The slaves sent to the silver mines weren't the best and most temperate men. They were the captured pirates, the violent, the disobedient, the lazy, the rebellious, They were the kind of men who hated having rules at all, and only perhaps a tenth showed up for the drills the next morning. The army spent that day training, and only began its march at noon the next day. By the third day, Liv realized what the prince had been betting on. The freed men, though now clothed and unbound, had no food. The Colour Prince's foragers had denuded the land of crops and livestock. No one would beat the freed men, but no one would feed them either. Of course, most of them were very familiar with privation. Starving the slaves was seen as the best way to cure lustfulness and laziness. They could deal with the pain of an empty belly. For a while. There was no traffic on the roads except other slaves, so there was no one to rob even if they wanted to. One small band had attacked the camp, making off with food, but not horses. They'd been hunted down, tied up, sprayed with red Luxin and set afire alive. As 3 days turned to four, large groups began travelling parallel to the slow-moving army. On the fifth day, at dinner, thousands came into camp. They were given crusts, nothing more. Free men work for their meat, they were told. The next morning, thousands more were at the drills. By the tenth day, 22,000 men had been added to the army. Of course, adding such huge numbers of untrained, undisciplined men to an already undertrained and undisciplined army caused huge problems. Liv would listen to the advisers bickering late into the night about it, even raising their voices to the prince. Should the slaves be put into their own units, or incorporated into existing ones? The latter. What was to be done about slaves who accosted women or men in the camp? Immolation. The slaves were all men, and only the camp overseers and their favourites, who'd all fled, had been allowed to visit the prostitutes in Thorikos. Could anything be done for them? The prince had addressed that by bringing together representatives of the slaves, his generals, and the prostitutes, who hadn't been organised in any sort of a guild, but did so rapidly when they were told that they could thus make a fortune. Liv's ears burned as she listened, but the prince never asked her to leave. He got the mother of the companions, as the prostitutes wished to be called, to tell him how many clients their women could serve in a day. He had two-thirds that many chits made up, made of bronze, each stamped with a lewd act. Then he made up a much smaller number of silver chits that could be used for the best companions. He left it up to the mother to decide how she wished to choose those women. He distributed a third of the chits to the generals, a third to the head of the foragers, and a third to his bursar. Chits were to be given to men who gave extraordinary service, either bringing in many more crops or volunteering for particularly hazardous assignments for the generals. At least half of the chits had to be distributed to slaves, and if there was any corruption in hoarding chits or dispensing them only to favourites, the corrupt man or woman would be drawn, hanged, and immolated. Then, every day, the companions would turn in the chits for reimbursement. The last third could be purchased by anyone in the army for set prices, helping offset the subsidy for the others. The prince said, "For the next 2 weeks, I want you to do your best to find ways to give out as many of these as possible, and not to the same men over and over. Give everyone a chance to earn one. After that, we'll scale back. We don't want riots or rapists this week, but we don't want financial ruin next week either." The next day, it seemed the camp shrank by a third, as the newly freed men went out on volunteer missions in every direction. As they approached Eidos, the towns got bigger, and the loot got better. None resisted until they were almost on the outskirts of Eidos itself. This city, Ergion, had a stone wall, archers, a few drafters. Liv couldn't figure what the people of the city were thinking. Eidos, which might be defended, was only a day's trip away for a family, 2 days for an army. An easy trip when fleeing for your life, but somehow the city elders had convinced themselves they could scatter a slave army like chaff. The headsman spat from the ramparts and instructed his archers to fire on the Colour Prince when he came forward to parley. The Colour Prince's drafters deflected the arrows easily. With drafters providing cover from the archers, their sappers, former miners, half of them, placed gunpowder charges under the wall within an hour. They blew open a hole and had the city in flames in another. This time, the Colour Prince gave orders for no quarter to be given. "This would be an example," he said. He only wanted 500 women and children left alive. The army went mad. and Liv stayed in the camp. Even dressed as a rich drafter and well-known as she was, it wasn't safe in Ergun for a woman alone. She didn't want to see what the freedmen were doing to their former masters anyway. That night, a hugely muscled man whose status as a former slave could only be noted by his sheer ear was allowed into the prince's tent. He bowed and presented a sack. The city headsman's head was inside. The colour prince gave him a handful of silver chits, looked him in the eye and nodded. As the brute left, leaving the disfigured head oozing blood on the prince's carpet, Koyos Whiteoak simply said, "Amazing what a man will risk for a few minutes with the mouth of a talented woman."